broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Good evening and welcome to the Phil Hendry Show, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go anywhere, even beyond the, through, you know, the looking glass, man, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, like Alvin? Alvin in Wonderland.
Not Alvin in Wonder. Are you kidding?
Where did you get that, man? That's what I thought it was called.
Alvin in Wonderland. You really thought it was called that, huh?
What's that one with Alvin?
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh.
You know, sometimes, Bud, I don't know whether you're telling me the truth or not, you know?
Dude, man, you got to be really stupid. I didn't say...
I agree with him. You either have to be really stupid or you're making that up. Alvin in Wonderland.
Dad thought that's what it was.
Man, get around. Read some books. Read a book.
You read a book.
What are you telling me to read books? I'm the only guy here that reads books. Alvin in Wonderland. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that, what they have Alice and the Chipmunk? Do you think they have Alice and the Chipmunk? They can do whatever they want to do.
Do they have Alice and the Chipmunks is what he's asking.
No.
Then they don't have Alvin in Wonderland. It's the other way around. Well, here we go again, starting off another show, trying to figure out what Bud's talking about. That's great.
You don't have to say anything.
You don't have to say anything either. You don't have to say anything either. You could just shut up. There's a concept. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is show number 853,000, where we started off trying to figure out what Bud's talking about. Alvin in Wonderland. I got your Alvin in Wonderland swinging.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
Anyway, welcome to the show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Very interesting bit of news. Interesting from the standpoint of the silliness of this thing is beyond my comprehension. Nonetheless, like you, I've come to expect just about anything. This has to do with a new Herman Cain ad that shows his chief of staff smoking a cigarette. And when you watch the commercial, you will see the man, and his name is Mark Block, puffing a cigarette as the line, I'm proud to be an American, or something like that, is being sung. So in other words, he gives this, he gives a pitch during the commercial, and then he puffs on a cigarette as you hear this American-style singing or an American lyric. Let's listen to the ad. And just, I'll point out for you when the cigarette smoking takes place.
Mark Block here. Since January, I've had the privilege of being the chief of staff to Herman Cain and the chief operating officer of the Friends of Herman Cain. Tomorrow, it's one day closer to the White House. I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved, because together, we can do this. We can take this country back.
I am America. One voice, united we stand.
All right, now, this is where he smokes the cigarette. Now, on Phil TV and HD, we're there. You see the cigarette being puffed. I Am an American is the lyric that is sung, and there you have the Mark Block for Herman Cain ad. That has been taken, and obviously when you smoke a cigarette in mass media today, if you're smoking a cigarette on television, I don't think they even allow it in TV anymore, just for very, very specific character needs, you know. Like, I was on a sitcom called Teachers, in which I played an older teacher who smoked cigarettes, and there was one scene I remember where I smoked a cigarette very, very briefly.
Yeah, well, the whole show was on very briefly.
Yes, that's correct. The whole show was on very, very briefly.
The cigarette you had probably lasted longer than the series.
Actually, the cigarette I had lasted shorter than the series, but your point is well made. I get it. Thank you for rubbing it in. Anyway... So, yeah, the character smoked a cigarette, but they don't really allow it, and it is considered a negative. It's very unusual to see, and even now people are wanting to ban it from motion pictures where you pay to walk into. I always felt that if you pay the money to walk in to see something, you should be allowed to see any damn thing you want to see. How could anybody come down hard on a film like cigarette smoking. So this was in the minds of people today when they saw this ad. They thought, well, this is people who wanted to politicize this, people that oppose Herman Cain, people that are opposed to conservatives, whatever, decided that they would take this ad and say the following things. It, A, means that Herman Cain is endorsing cigarette smoking. B, is let's go to the old standby. B, it's bad for children. We don't want our kids looking at cigarette smoking because then they will emulate it and they will become the lowest scum on earth. Never mind the fact that, you know, in history, some of the greatest people in the history of the world were cigarette smokers, some of the greatest artists, some of the greatest politicians, some of the greatest thinkers, some of the greatest people were cigarette smokers. But we don't want people to know that, do we? So we, for instance, to give an example, on the Robert Johnson stamp that the U.S. Post Office issued, Robert Johnson was one of the great blues singers of the 1930s and 40s, and today is considered legendary among all guitar players and songwriters who are aficionados of the blues, rhythm and blues, and rock and roll, Robert Johnson. And there's a very famous picture of him with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth and the neck of his six-string steel string guitar. They airbrushed the cigarette out. What does that mean? It means that here is a great American, a great influence, but he, despite what he actually did, we don't want you to know that he smokes cigarettes. So we don't want you to know all there is to know about the man. Now, granted, if a guy cheats on his wife or was bad with his child support or was less than a stellar human being, we don't necessarily have to put that into everything we say and do concerning that individual. For instance, Thomas Jefferson owning slaves, Martin Luther King being unfaithful to his wife, and so forth. However, if you're using an image that is iconic of an individual, and there it is a public thing, it's not a private thing, it's not hidden from view, it's nothing that he considered himself to be something he wanted to hide, then why not have the cigarette hanging out of his face? That's some of the thinking on my end of things, if you'll pardon the expression. Now, when I said the children are, scandalized, I wasn't kidding. On the line with me is a young man by the name of Justin McElroy. He is with L.A. Canyon High School, a junior at L.A. Canyon High School, and also is a member of the student council prefecture there. And the kids there at L.A. Canyon have gotten wrapped up in this Herman Cain ad and the cigarette appearing in the ad with Mr. Mark Block. And Justin, how are you this evening?
Yes, sir. I'm doing good.
And thank you for joining us late.
Yes, sir.
What do you think, what do your classmates think? First of all, two questions. How do you feel about people saying this is a bad influence on you? And what is, in point of fact, your opinion? What influence is it actually having on you?
I think that the one person that I've had the most conversation about this with has been my mom, who has influenced me a great deal about this. And I feel that she has told me that it's not good for myself and for other people of my age. I'm 17, and I'm not yet of age. I don't smoke cigarettes. When I see this man, Mr. Block, smoking a cigarette in this commercial, and you said, Mr. Henry, and you're right, that it's a commercial, and it has the song, I'm an American, and when I hear that, when I see it, it does have, I guess, an influence on me that's sort of attractive, you know. And
what do you mean by that?
I think that when I see him smoke the cigarette and I hear I am an American, and talking with my mom and getting a lot of, and getting her views, getting some other views on it, it can't help but enforce in me the feeling that cigarettes are, sort of strong, you know.
All American?
Yeah, all American, and you know, are not bad, certainly, and not anything that, and are indicative of our country and indicative of the strength of our country.
Now, you're mentioning your mom. You're saying in speaking to your mom about this, do you mind if I ask you, what is your mother's political persuasion?
I don't really know. I suspect my mother, I do know that both my parents voted for Barack Obama. I don't know that my mom right now is very happy with Barack Obama, you know, but I don't really know, you know.
Well, would you say that your mother is opposed to Herman Cain?
Well, I mean, I would say that my mom is opposed to Herman Cain for things like this, that he's not very responsible, and, you know, he says stuff that, I think he said something about, you know, throwing people against an electric fence, or he didn't say that.
No, he mentioned that the fence is electrified, and so that, I think something like it solves problems.
Yeah, but I mean, so I think my mom's opposed to him.
Are you saying that otherwise your mother would vote conservative?
Well, I don't really know.
See, here's the reason why I'm asking. I'm wondering if your mom is influencing you based on her politics as opposed to what's best for you.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, I love my mom. I think she, you know, does what's best for me.
Well, you know what? That was a bad question. You're right. I apologize for that question. Of course she does. And,
you know, I just think that my mom would always make decisions. I like to think that my mom makes decisions, and my dad, too, you know, based on what's best for me and not necessarily who they want to vote for.
You know, you're absolutely right. I apologize for that question. That's I give your mother credit for that, and I apologize. I guess what I'm saying is, Justin, the fact that you are opposed to this ad or think that this ad is injurious to you as a person, do you feel that way, or is it sort of your mom having more influence on you than ordinarily she would have?
No, I mean, I really do. I mean, I do feel that way. I mean, my mom pointed out to me how, you know, it's how the commercial is bad for young people, but she didn't influence me, if that's what you mean. I did talk to her and tell her what my feelings were. And
what did you tell her your feelings were?
Well, I told her that I was confused by the ad and that I didn't know what it meant and why they were trying to do that. It seemed like they were trying to hurt me, or not me, but they were trying to hurt other kids. And she and I talked about it, and I came away feeling that, yeah, Herman Cain, if he's not trying to hurt kids, which maybe he's not, but I don't know for sure, he's doesn't really think too much about kids, because it definitely did hurt me. And
but you came to that conclusion after talking to your mom?
Well, yeah, but I mean, my mom didn't tell me how to think, you know, if that's what you're saying, Mr. Henry, because it...
No, I wanted to know, I don't necessarily think that way.
Well, it seems like from your questions, though, that's sort of how you're going.
No, I'm just trying to get all sides. I'm trying to answer questions from all sides, okay? Hold on for a minute. We have Justin McElroy with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. As we talk to him about the Herman Cain ad, which shows Mark Block, his campaign manager, smoking a cigarette. Is it a negative thing for kids? Is it a negative thing for the campaign of Herman Cain? Did it show great insensitivity or stupidity? We're listening to at least one young man here from L.A. Canyon High School, who believes that it did negatively affect him. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We have with us Justin McElroy, a junior at L.A. Canyon High School in northern environs of Los Angeles County. We're talking with him here about this Herman Cain ad. Now, we're going to play this for you one more time. It is an ad in which Mark Block, who is the campaign manager for Herman Cain, this man is smoking a cigarette in the middle of the ad, and supposedly this made a lot of people angry. It's not in the middle. It's actually at the very end. I'm going to play this for you. When you hear the music, which says something like, I'm an American, or ain't it great to be an American, I don't know if you remember, Justin, what it was.
It's just sort of the singing, and that's the part when I hear it, that's the part where I remember feeling like, you know, smoking cigarettes is probably... you know, a good thing. And I'm 17. I'm not even of age yet, and that's why I say it had a negative influence on me.
Okay, and that's what Justin is saying, and he's also saying a lot of his friends at school are saying the same thing, that the Herman Cain ad with Mark Block had a negative effect. So let's listen right now to this commercial.
Mark Block here. Since January, I've had the privilege of being the chief of staff to Herman Cain and the chief operating officer of the Friends of Herman Cain. Tomorrow is one day closer to the White House. I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved, because together, we can do this. We can take this country back.
Right here is where the smoking... So in that area right there where we hear the female singing, "I am an American," is when Mr. Block is taking the drag on the cigarette. And it was a very bold, I think, very bold image that nonetheless, tonight, Justin, you are saying had a negative effect on you and many of your classmates.
That is correct, yes, sir.
Tell me about what your classmates said.
A lot of them had similar conversations with their mom or their dad. Just to straighten it out, you know, in their own minds, because they were feeling confused about what they did to them, and what Herman Cain was going to do to them.
But when you say Herman Cain was going to do to them...
Well, I mean the commercial. And I shouldn't say what Herman Cain was going to do, but what I'm saying is what Herman Cain did with the commercial. And so that's when we said, well, look, I'm trying to... I'm trying to just live my life, and I'm trying to be in, I guess what you could say is I'm trying to survive being in high school, and all of a sudden here comes this commercial.
I'm going to play this section for you again, Justin, because you asked me to. This is the key section here of the singing, I believe. Let me just roll it back, where the actual cigarette smoking takes place.
This country back.
Right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Right here is where, when I heard I'm an American, I felt like a lot of ways that I would be, when he smoked the cigarette on that one, when she sang that way, I felt like I had been lied to by the people that told me to quit, because they were being strong and singing about being an American, and that guy was smoking a cigarette, and I felt as if my mother and my father and everybody had lied to me about cigarettes. And that's one of the reasons why I went to my mom and I said, you know, I asked her, why did you lie to me? And she said, you know, I didn't lie to you. And I said, well, yeah, you did. And she asked why, and I said, because of how I felt when I heard the commercial. And she said, no, you are being influenced by them to think that way, and that really has had a negative effect on you because you want to have a cigarette.
Did you want to have a cigarette?
What do you mean?
When you heard I Am an American sung and you saw the man, Mr. Block, puffing on the cigarette, did you want to have a cigarette?
I did, yeah. I did want to have a cigarette. I felt that my mother explained to me that I wanted to have a cigarette because I am a male, and
you're hold on for a minute. Your mother explained to you what?
Well,
see, what I'm hearing here is that your mom has told you basically how to feel about this.
No, I mean, no, that's no way. I mean, that would make me. That is kind of an insult. I would never let my mom tell me how to think about anything because I don't really. In a lot of ways, I don't approve of how my mom conducts her life. She's very, I love my mother, but she's the clothes she wears are inappropriate a lot of times, and she's very provocative around, you know, men and stuff. So I don't really approve of my mom, but I do believe her.
So you have this kind of this relationship with your mother, okay?
I mean, I believe her when she says that I've been negatively affected by the cigarette smoke.
All right, so what do you think should be done coming from a high school student point of view?
What I feel should be done is that they should take the commercial off the air and not allow it to be run. And
do you feel that way, or did your mom tell you that?
No, I mean, I felt...
I'm just asking, you know, because...
No, I feel that way. My mom agrees with me, and my dad agrees with me, but I do feel it needs to come off the air.
All right, Justin McElroy with us on the Herman Cain ad with the cigarette smoke, and we'll be back, 877-876-PHIL. World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Justin McElroy from L.A. Canyon High School in the northern environs. I think it's around Lancaster. I'm not sure. Justin, where is your school located?
Actually, we're in Chatsworth.
Oh, Chatsworth. Okay, sorry. And we're talking about the effect that this cigarette, because, you know, let's face it, When these mistakes are made, or when these things happen, which is in this case a cigarette was smoked in the middle of a Herman Cain ad, we get all kinds of discussion from people about you know, the effect it has on kids. And so we're asking this young man, Justin. Now, you have told me that it has had a negative effect on you. I'm not sure whether I know this is your feeling or your mother's feeling, or what it is, but I can assure you that that it sounds a little bit like both, to me, anyway.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, my mom has told me that if I need to be very vocal about the Herman Cain campaign and how much it hurts me, because, you know, my mom's concerned that the conservatives will get back in. Yeah, that's true. But she's not trying. She's not telling me to say this because she doesn't want Herman McCain elected. And
his name's not McCain; it's Cain. You know, which may be a very unfortunate last name.
No, I meant Cain. Yeah.
Maybe given the elections in 2008. Now I want to bring on here Brad Rifkin in Las Vegas. Brad survived lung cancer back in 2007. And Brad, how are you tonight, sir?
Thank you for bringing me on, and thanks for the continued good work you're doing on the radio.
What kind of lung cancer did you have?
Well, I had something called an adenocarcinoma. It was a common, what is called a NSCLC, which is a normal size cell lung cancer. It's about 50% of all lung cancers in the United States, and it's associated with smoking, which is what I was doing, and... but they do see it in non-smokers, too.
It's called a what?
It was called adenocarcinoma, and I had part of my right lung removed. I was very fortunate. It was caught very early, and as a result of that, I've been, I've been cigarette-free.
Now, did you see this commercial?
Yes, I did.
And what do you think? Now, you're a lung cancer survivor, and you see Herman Cain with this... commercial, and this guy that's smoking in the middle of the commercial, what did you think of it?
I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I'm not a reformed smoker. And with all due respect to the young man that you have on your program, I'm not, you know, I don't have my mom telling me, you know, what to think. And I'm not, you know, I'm my own man. So I saw it, and I felt it's his right. As an American, to smoke a cigarette, there's no law against smoking cigarettes in commercials. And I don't think that just because a guy takes a couple of puffs on a cigarette, kids are going to go out and pick up a cigarette.
What do you think of that, Justin?
Well, I just want to tell the guy that I don't think the way I think because my mom told me to, you know?
I mean, that's what it sounded like to me. That's what Mr. Henry was saying, you know?
You know, I know, but I don't... You know, I'm not doing it because my mom said. I'm doing it because I really do feel, you know, that.
Okay, why do you feel?
I mean, you know, you had your lung out, right?
No, I didn't have my lung. I had part of my lung.
Has part of his lung taken out?
Well, that's what I mean. And I don't want to grow up to have, you know, my lungs or whatever taken away, and it's bad for you. And when I saw that commercial, I knew that I was being badly influenced.
And, well, when you say you were being bad, do you mind if I ask a question, Bill?
Go ahead.
When you say you were being badly influenced, what does that mean? I mean,
it means that I knew that when that man smoked the cigarette, that it was hurting me. It was hurting my mind.
What, so that means that you felt like you were going to go out and smoke a cigarette?
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, you're sitting here talking to me and everything, and you had your part of your lung removed. Don't you feel like you'll be made to go have one too?
No, I don't feel made to go have what? You know,
a cigarette. I'm not talking about going out and having butt sex or.
Hey, look at.
Can we watch the language there? I don't think that that's appropriate for you at all.
Well, it's not appropriate for this gentleman.
Hey, I didn't say anything. You should watch your language. Mr. Henry's right.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I didn't. Well, okay. I mean, I'm sorry, but he's going like, you know, do you want to go out and have one?
And I meant to say, you know, you said go out and have one.
Yeah, I know, but the one you said go out and have one, I think you said go out and have one. And
no, I think you said it.
Yeah, I think you were the one that said it.
No, I did not. I did not say go out and have one, because that sounds like going out and experimenting with, you know, getting a guy to have, you know, do something to you. And,
What?
What are you talking about, man? What are you talking about?
What does that mean?
I think you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, let's go out and have one.
Hey, I'm talking about a cigarette. And I'm talking about whether or not you wanted to have a cigarette.
And I already told you that I was negatively influenced by the man that smoked it on TV.
So you were negatively influenced by this man, Mr. Block, who you don't know. He's never been to your home. You've never spoken to him. You've never met him. And yet that simple act of him raising that cigarette to his mouth and puffing on it is enough to, you know...
To what?
It's enough to make you want to go have a cigarette.
No, it's not enough. It's bad. It's bad to me. In other words, I'm not going to go have a cigarette, but that is going to make me want... It's bad for me because I may want to go have one.
That's exactly what this man is saying.
That's what I'm trying to say.
He's saying that the act of that man smoking that cigarette is of a negative influence on you.
Yes, that's exactly right, yeah.
So, when you said that...
Why are you asking me questions? I could ask you questions.
Because you're the guy that came on here saying that the ad was bad.
Well, you're the guy that came on here saying ad was good. So why can't I ask you questions?
Go ahead.
How come after you had lung cancer that you're all okay with smoking?
I'm not okay with smoking. I don't smoke cigarettes.
No, but I mean, like, how come after having lung cancer, you're okay with kids being influenced to have... a cigarette?
Because I'm not okay with it, you know.
See, you don't have an answer for that. See,
no, I said. See.
Let the guy answer, will you?
See,
I say, what you know? I said, see.
Hey, let him answer, will you, Justin? Don't sit there going, see.
Well, he doesn't have an answer for it.
Yeah, I do. I'm not okay with you being influenced to have a cigarette. I'm not okay with you being, but I don't think that you did because you said that your mother told you to say the things what you said.
Okay, right there. See, Mr. Henry, there it is. The lid got ripped off of it when the man said he thought that my mom influenced. Okay, yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, you lipped the lid off of it.
What do you mean I lipped the lid off of it?
You did.
You mean he ripped the lid off?
No, he lipped the lid. And
what does that mean, I lip the rid?
It means you put your lips on it. And
something, I don't like anybody talking to me like that.
Well, I mean, the fact is that you're admitting to the fact that you, I forget what we were talking about now.
Well, you guys are getting off on some weird-ass tangent here, but essentially what you're saying, Justin, is that Mr. Rifkin... I don't know what you're saying. I think you're saying that Mr. Rifkin is okay with kids smoking cigarettes.
I'm not okay with kids smoking cigarettes. All right. I don't blame you, by the way, for losing track when a kid said rip, you know, lip the rid. And
that's what you said, and that's what I heard you say. And my mom is here too. And
Your mom, you know. Yeah, what about my mom? You've been bringing your mom up and talking about how your mom said this and your mom said that and your mom said something else and your mom is this and your mom is that. And then you turned around and you said that your mom addresses inappropriately, that she's loose around men, that she is some kind of a... I mean, I don't know what you actually said. What is he doing?
What are you doing?
That isn't me. That's just... that was... I don't know what that was.
That sounds like a bong hit to me. Okay. So,
Well, it doesn't matter, Mr. Henry. I wasn't smoking it, you know.
Well, that's fine. But, so I guess we know the thinking that goes into, the conclusions that you draw.
It's a bong hit. And for me and for the people that I have known in my life, I would ask the young man not to do that while we're talking on the... Do not do that while you're talking.
Hold on.
What? Would you not do that while we're talking? Because I'm over here trying to talk to you.
Hey, put the bong down, okay?
Mr. Henry, I'm not doing it.
Well, whoever it is.
I'm just saying that for all the people that I've known who are against smoking...
Yeah, but you guys are sitting there blasting up... All right.
See, what a hypocrite. That's your mom drink. I bet you that's your mom smoking it.
Maybe it's your mom. I don't know, you know?
Great. Okay, thanks, gentlemen, very much for being on the program tonight. Talking about the cigarette that was in the Herman Cain ad that has caused some discussion. And again, like everything else on this show, you have to understand when we give you a news story, we also like to give you another added piece of information. We tell you what the news story is. We tell you that this is supposedly making news. And then we tell you whether or not it is in fact making news. Is it really something that is making news or is it something that has been invented by the media itself to sell a newspaper? At this particular point, it seems like 90% of these stories that it has been to a degree invented, but there seems to be some controversy, I think, among politicos and members of the opposition, you know. All right, we're going to come back on a world-famous Phil Henry show with more news, including a visit from Mr. Roland Schwinn from Pride America on the McDonald's restaurant menu, adding the McRib. The McRib has made a comeback. We'll talk with Roland Schwinn from Pride America coming up next hour on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show.
Because of what they did there. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Let me get back to this young man. RC, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes, we did.
So, the reason why I called up was I wanted to talk to that one guy, though.
Well, he's gone, but you were asking me about shrimping?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to believe that you can catch a half-foot-long shrimp in America or in America. And I think a lot of people have pretty well figured that out.
Why people figured that out? Why is it that I got to buy shrimp that comes from Vietnam?
Well, I mean, you don't have to buy shrimp that comes from Vietnam, or you don't have to buy any shrimp at all. But if you've seen a lot of the movies that have been made, and I'm sure you have, Mr. Henry, that have come out of China, and also I guess they do movies out of Vietnam, but I'm not really sure about it. I mean, that's also where the atomic bomb was originally blown away or blown up or anything, and that affected the size of a lot of the shrimp that you do have. And it is radiation, which is bad, but also it's you can still eat it. And
are you trying to tell me? And this is what you're trying to tell me. That Asian shrimp...
I'm just telling you that what I know from friends of mine that served over in Vietnam, and...
I know that you're in a military academy, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you want to be in the Army, is that correct?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with me wanting to be in the Army. This has more of me to do with when you said that you caught half-foot-long shrimp in Florida, which I thought was bogus. And that's why I said what I said.
Well, it's not bogus, because I'm here to tell you I did. And we used to, you know...
Well, how'd you catch them?
We caught them with a net.
No. I think you're supposed to do it with a line.
You don't catch shrimp with a line. You don't catch shrimp with a fishing pole, with a rod?
Well, I mean, what do you mean with a net?
Everybody knows you catch shrimp with a net, okay? And you have a light, and the shrimp are drawn to the light, and you push your net down there, and that's how you catch them. Now, I don't know where you're getting your information, but radiation, insofar as it exists in the waters of Asia, like China and whatever, didn't make the shrimp over there bigger.
Well, I don't know how you can say that because the...
I can say it because it's true.
Because the mythology that has come, and if you've ever seen any Japanese anime, which I do and a lot of my friends and I really like it a lot, is that you'll see a lot of the mutations that are on the menus over there.
And what mutations are on the menus? What do you mean?
Well, I mean the I don't want to say giant because you'll say that I'm lying, but...
I'm not going to call you a liar, young man. I'm just saying that there's no such thing as the radiation causing the seafood to grow bigger. So that when I say that I caught... we would catch shrimp up to a half a foot long. Yeah, they're huge. Have you ever really seen shrimp out of the ocean?
Well, yeah, I've seen shrimp out of the ocean. Excuse me, that's what you eat when you go to order shrimp. It comes from the ocean. God, can you believe what you just said?
No, hey, wait a second. I mean, have you ever seen a shrimp? Have you ever been standing there when somebody caught a shrimp?
Well, I don't know that you have to be standing there when someone catches a whale to know that the whale, that the bottom of the bottom of the ocean's full of whale dew.
What?
I said I don't think you have to be there when they catch a whale to know that the whales go dew at the bottom.
Dude, I don't know what you just said. Okay.
I can say it again. I don't stutter.
Yeah, well, you know what? You might as well, because that doesn't make any sense. What I'm talking about. I'm saying, if you've ever seen a shrimp caught, you see big ass shrimp, way bigger than anything they're going to serve you in a restaurant, and probably even bigger than what you buy in a store. And I don't know what they do with those giant ones. You know,
probably grind them up and make them into cat food.
Yeah, that's what I heard. They make it into cat food.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard, to make a big giant shrimp out of that and make it cat food. That proves you're lying. And
you know, we don't like to call people liars around here. That is a very insulting and very rude thing. All right?
Well, I mean...
What did you tell me? I'm lying? Are you saying I'm lying?
Well, if you said they grind up a giant shrimp to give to a cat...
I'm just telling you, I think that they do that.
I don't know if they take the big giant... I don't know what they do with those. There's a lot of the stuff that happens, that a lot of the seafood is turned into cat food. I know that. They grind it up. They put it in a can. They call it,
Well, they'll call it, like, seafood buffet and give it to the cat like the cat cares. You know, like if you've ever seen Sheba, and...
Yeah, well, Sheba's got the seafood buffet and a tuna treat.
Yeah. So what?
Well, I mean, I just think it's important to know that while they're taking what you're saying, there's giant shrimp, and what they do with it is grind it up and make it into the seafood buffet, and they're lying. Well, they're not lying to a cat because the cat's not buying it, you know.
Yeah, but still, if you're gonna buy it and give it to a cat,
you guys are listening to yourselves, right?
What?
What? I'm talking to this guy about the actual size of shrimp out of the ocean, and now we're on seafood buffet and Sheba?
Well, no, we're just seeing whether or not a cat knows the difference between the Sheba buffet or the, like...
Yeah, like tuna, or like the tuna banquet.
Yeah, like, if you ever seen it, have you ever had a tuna banquet? I tried it one time, wasn't bad.
Did you put it on a cracker?
Yeah. Are you guys out of your minds? You put the tuna banquet on a cracker?
It's to see if your cat will like it.
Well, I mean, Mr. Henry, the point is, you're the one that said that there's gigantic shrimp in the ocean, and yet you reject the notion that maybe they come from Japan. You, because you want to be selling it to America.
You know something, man? All I'm telling you is that there's giant shrimp that I've caught in American waters, and yes, I'd like American seafood to be sold in our stores more than it is, and no, I don't buy any Chinese seafood, I don't buy any Vietnamese seafood. Why? I'm not boycotting them. I'm not boycotting them at all. I'm trying to support American fishermen, and I like the idea, especially when it comes to fish. I like the idea of eating something that was caught in American waters. I don't know. Call me crazy.
I mean, what difference does it make? It's still the same fish. It's not. You just said they don't have no giant fish in China, and they don't have no giant. I mean, you know what you're saying? In other words, that they're not no gianter.
Not no gianter.
No, no, they ain't no bigger.
Yeah, that's what I figured he was trying to say.
Well, but they're. So what difference does it make?
Yeah, exactly. What difference does it make?
Yeah, what difference does it make?
What difference does it make?
That's what difference does it make? I can buy a
Shiba.
I can buy Shiba, not Shiba. I can buy seafood over here, and it's as good a quality. If get these guys out of here, get him out. Thank you very much, young man. Blow it out your, you know what? God,
but you never taken tuna treat on a cracker.
No, bud. No, I haven't. And if you have, if I ever see you doing that, you're fired. That's number 853 of the things I would fire you for. Eating Sheba on a cracker. We'll be back here on the World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch and where we go anywhere to get you to places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't and they don't, so they won't and they wouldn't and they couldn't and they shouldn't, man. And underline the shouldn't part. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with me here. We will also do, of course, our, what's it called?
News and information.
Yeah. All right, News and Information Hour coming up in our next hour. Roland Schwinn has been a frequent contributor on our program. Mr. Schwinn is the president and one of the founding members of Pride America, a group of people who are not, in the words of their charter, constrained by weight or size. They find pride in who they are and in what they're dealing with. A lot of people think that their organization is about being proud of being overweight, and that's not it at all. It's about in the times that I've talked to Mr. Schwinn and others, it's just about being yourself. Now, this news story was handled today by Pride America in a news release, and they had some commentary on it. But here it is from USA Today: the McRib, the elusive sandwich that has inspired a cult-like following, is back. McDonald's announced Monday that the boneless barbecue pork sandwich, usually available in only a few stores at a time, will be sold at all U.S. locations through November the 14th. Most of the time, it's up to local franchises to determine when and if they want to sell the McRib, except in Germany, the only place where it's always available, the McRib, always. I don't know why that is, you know?
Yeah, because the Germans are not, there's no Jews there.
Oh, is that why? Because there's no Jews there, huh? What an idiot, you know?
Well, I mean, why do they?
I guess it's because there's no Jews there, so you don't have to offend them, so you can eat pork all the time.
Well, ain't that it?
I don't know. Why do you think that's it?
Because they killed all of them.
Okay, well, great. Are you serious? Do you honestly believe that McDonald's would acknowledge something like that? Hey, we can sell the McRib, we can sell pork in Germany because all the Jews are gone.
Well, I don't know, man. They're trying to do the best they can with the business that they do of what they have.
Uh-huh. Anyway, McDonald's said the response...
What does that mean, uh-huh?
Hey, bud, I'm done talking to you. McDonald's said the response was so great last November... Talk to me like that.
Well, go on, huh?
I don't care. You gotta sit there and go, we did need a... I say what I say, and then when I'm done, we move on, and you don't ask any more questions.
Okay, I just was wondering.
Yeah, really? Well, I figured you were wondering. Well, guess what? Keep on wondering. McDonald's said the response was so great last November when it made the McRib available, no Jews there.
Hey, man, you've got to stick to the point here.
Yeah, what are you pushing?
Push me, you little punk. McDonald said the response was so great last November.
You're just mad because KUFO put you on weekends. I'm going to... Hey,
kick your ass.
Yo, dude, what are you trying to do, man? Do that Christian Bale?
Maybe. Maybe I'll pull a Christian Bale here. And no, it won't be a Christian Bale. It'll be a Phil Henry. I really will kick his ass.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Shut up. That's what you're... You're not shutting up. That's the thing you're doing wrong. McDonald's said the response was so great last November when it made the McRib available nationally for about 3 weeks that it decided to bring it back nationwide this year, except in Germany, where it's always available because they killed all the Jews. The company, which previously hadn't sold a McRib nationally since 1994, declined to give sales numbers. The sandwich, which is dressed with onions...
What's that mean, dressed? They dress it.
I bet you think that means they put it in a hat and slacks. Is that it?
What does it mean?
How do you do that, bud? How do you take a rib sandwich and put a hat on it?
I don't know.
It's a term they use in the culinary arts, which means cooking. When you dress something, it means you are seasoning it. You are putting on some sauces. You are basting it. You're, you know, garnishing it and so forth. The sandwich, which is dressed with onions, pickle slices, and barbecue sauce, was introduced nationally in 1982 with 500 calories and 26 grams of fat. It's slightly trimmer than the Big Mac, which is 540 calories and 29 grams of fat. And just like the Big Mac, the McRib has become a popular McDonald's offering. There are Facebook groups such as Bring Back the McRib. There are Twitter tags which posts range from Lucky Me, the McRib is back, to If You Eat McRibs, You Need to Reevaluate What It Is You Actually Want in Life. Is that a hashtag or something? Okay. So talking with us here from Houston, Texas tonight is Roland Schwinn from Pride America. And Roland, thanks for being with us.
I'm really happy, Bill.
And the McRib is back, and you heard that tag. If you eat McRibs, you need to reevaluate what it is you actually want in your life. How do you feel about that?
Well, the memo that we did today was a very clear statement of how we feel about the McRib sandwich. We battled the weight issue in our organization, at the same time trying to maintain pride in who we are and what we are, and have some shred of dignity and decency in our life. For McDonald's to reintroduce the McRib shows that they are not serious about assisting Pride America and other groups in maintaining the image that people who are not size confined, and you notice we don't say that we're overweight and we don't say that we're fat, we say that we are not size confined. When they return to the American diet the McRib, that's when we wrote the editorial that we did, and we stand by it.
Now, in the editorial that you wrote in Pride America, you said the McRib is just one of many reasons that there are people who are not size confined in America. For those millions of people, much of what they do in life is healthy, and that not being size confined has no negative impact. But there are those of us in Pride America who do want to be free to elect what our size will be. And when the McRib is introduced, as it was by McDonald's, you take that choice away from us. Explain that, please.
Yes. What is meant by that? And I wrote that editorial, too, by the way. What I meant by that was this. In Pride America, we make choices for ourselves in what we eat, how we dress, how we look, and we do this knowing that we're not size confined. Some of us are in excess of 300 pounds. I myself weigh 320 pounds, and yet I am fully mobile. I'm healthy. I don't have any health issues. I do watch what I eat. I'm not looking to become the world's biggest man or any of these other nonsensical goals that some people have. But the McRib is a game changer. The McRib is an attractive meal item. It is particularly attractive to those of us who are members of Pride America, those who are not sized to fly, because it is pork, it is very flavorful, it is garnished, as you mentioned, Phil, in dressing it or garnishing it, it is garnished very well. It's an excellent sandwich, and of course it has a delicious sandwich bun or sourdough bun that is encases this delicious sandwich. Not being size confined means that I'm going to want to eat a McRib. Others who are not size confined will want to eat a McRib. And so we will be front and center at McDonald's buying as many McRibs as we can without one shred of dignity or decency or pride left, because McDonald's has gone for the sweet spot. They have, in baseball, they call it a sweet spot, Phil. If you hit a ball in a sweet spot, you've hit it out of the ballpark. McDonald's has hit the sweet spot of Pride America and people that are not size confined.
And McDonald's has hit the sweet spot of Pride America and people that are not
size confined.
Size confined. So, with the reintroduction of the McRib, what effectively have they done?
What they have done effectively is declared war on people who are trying to control their weight and their size and their self-image. They've declared war on us, and they have said, so you're attempting to get a hold of your life and to control your physical life and your physical image and your physical appearance. Well, we're not going to let you do that. Use the McRib.
Do you think that this is conscious, you know, on the part of McDonald's?
I don't know. But
because the way you said that, it sounds like, you know, they're declaring war in a conscious way.
No, I don't know. I mean, most likely it is more an omissive. It's more the myopic and the tunnel vision that a corporation has when it sees a profit. So they don't know who they're hurting. All they know is that they're going to put a big rib out there, and you're going to have millions and millions and millions of people that are not size confined going to buy this. And all the work that we've done in trying to keep people who are fat thousands away from this nonsense is going to go for naught.
Roland Schwinn with us here. So the McRib is a real danger to people who are overweight.
People that are not size confined. That's right.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. The McRib is back, and McDonald's is making a big deal out of it. And it is a sandwich of 500 calories, 26 grams of fat. It is a pork sandwich, and it's a big popular sandwich. And among people that are battling weight problems, such as people in Pride America, Mr. Schwinn says it's like McDonald's declaring war on them. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Roland Schwinn from Fat Pride. It's not Fat Pride anymore, Roland. It's Pride America.
You are absolutely right, Phil. We changed the name of Fat Pride 2 years ago to Pride America. We felt it was far more interactive and much, much more welcoming, I think, to new members.
All right. We're talking about the McRib and McDonald's bringing it back, which is a threat to Pride America, threat to size-challenged people. I've heard people, or what you call not size-contained.
We call space-contained. We are not contained in space. It sounds, to the uninitiated, science fiction, a new age. But what we mean is that space does not contain us. It means that, obviously, the girth and the width and the size of our bodies expands beyond what other people, what the size of other people. So when we are not space-contained, or we are not size-contained, we are, in fact, large, overweight.
Why not just say what a lot of people say, are fat?
No, we will never use that word, and it is painful for me to hear that word. And I'm very sorry that you said that, because that is a painful, painful reminder of a self-image that we have worked very hard to get rid of.
And when I say the word fat, are you feeling pain?
Oh, God. It's like a wave of... The best way I can describe it is a wave of nausea.
Did you talk about fat?
Oh.
Okay, so we can't say that word.
Oh. 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 Please don't.
You cannot say that word, bud, okay?
Well, you said it.
I said it by mistake.
It's all right. I should have warned you, and I apologize.
All right, we will try to keep that word out of our...
What word?
Fat.
Don't...
Don't
say it.
I made a mistake.
Well, what happened?
You're not supposed to say it.
Oh. Woo! Woo-hoo! Man. Oh, man.
God.
What happened to him, man? Just because I said that word?
Don't say the word.
Please don't say it.
I'm sorry.
All right. I have to tell you, Phil, I'm so big now, nothing matters. You know, I don't sweat. There's an old saying, I don't sweat the small stuff. Well, when you're as big as me, when you're the size that I am, you sure as heck don't sweat the small stuff. You sure don't. So the McRib, as I was saying to you before I was interrupted by this man saying the word that I hope he doesn't say again.
We will not use that word again.
Is that the McRib is a virtual declaration of war by McDonald's on those of us that are not size contained, those of us who are not, who are size, not size restricted. And I am hopeful that McDonald's will see their way clear.
Otherwise, you said that people who are not size restricted or not size contained.
No, I said space contained. You're either not size restricted or you're not space contained. And
what does space contained mean?
It means you're fat.
Hey!
Will you shut up, man?
Yeah!
You ain't supposed to use that word.
You asked me what it meant.
Just shut up about that word.
Hey!
What's he doing?
I don't know, it sounds disgusting, though.
This is disgusting. It's disgusting.
What is it?
It's disgusting, you're right. When you say that word, what happens to me is disgusting. Oh, God, now I gotta get towels and everything else.
Oh, my God, what are you talking about?
You don't want to know. Get towels, get paper towels if you can, but just get regular bath towels.
You got it, Ed.
Oh. All right, please, Phil, tell the men in your studio not to use that word.
Don't say the word. Don't tell me you don't know what the word is.
Please don't say it.
I know.
All right. Now, with people coming to McDonald's for the McRib, people who are members of your organization, Pride America, other dieting organizations, other organizations of people that are proud of their size and so forth, or not, as the case may be, what does this mean? Does this mean that there is a rollback?
First of all, we don't appreciate the cheap jokes. I think you're better than that, Phil.
What cheap joke are you talking about?
Rollback. All right, roll back. You're talking about me being rolled back like I'm a beer barrel?
Like you're a beer?
Like I'm a beer barrel.
You're like the beer barrel.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say, no, I did not mean to make a joke.
Well, it sounded like you were making a joke. I don't appreciate the cheap attempt at humor. If you want to make an attempt at humor, Phil, put some money into it. Put some expense into it. Put some value to it, all right? Not the cheap stuff. And I never thought of you as a guy that was involved in cheap stuff, you know?
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is, what happens then is this going to keep your efforts from expanding?
Well, yes, because if we have people going to McDonald's for the McRib, it doesn't make any difference. I published a photograph of the McRib to members of Pride America. I published a photograph of the McRib to other groups, the McRib, before you put the barbecue sauce on it. If you see the McRib before the barbecue sauce goes on it, you'll vomit. You will vomit, and you'll probably vomit blood. I kid you not. It is, in the words of Vincent Price in The Fly, a grotesque. It's a grotesquery.
Who said that?
Vincent Price said of The Fly.
Okay, that's enough to put me off of it.
Let me tell you what. There's nothing you've ever seen in your life before or since that is as frightening as a McRib without the sauce on it. And I challenge anyone, to go into a McDonald's and say, I'd like a McRib, but first, let me see it without the sauce on it. Go ahead and take a good long look at it, and then go ahead, I dare you to order it, and to eat it. What are you laughing about?
Well, I mean, so in other words, why would anybody from your organization want it?
Phil, we are not your average eater. We eat people who are in Pride America. We eat everything. We eat everything. And if you want to know the stories about cats, dogs that are missing, I'm not kidding you. We eat it.
Cats and dogs.
I'm telling you, we eat everything. Everything in the world.
Well, all right. Okay, so that doesn't work.
No, the only thing that's going to work is to speak the truth to these people and to tell them that McDonald's is declaring war on us, those of us that are not space-contained, those of us that are not size-restricted. McDonald's has declared war on us, and they won't be satisfied till all of us are begging for McRib, are begging to eat a McRib even after we've seen it without a sauce on it.
Roland Schwinn from Pride America. We'll be back to the Hendry Show. Hendry.
ANZ.com. WETANZ.com.
This is the world-famous Bill Hendry Show.
No, he should have sent it right when I asked for it. See, that's what I'm... This is the reaction time. Anyway, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I asked Bud to send me the picture of the McRib, because we have on the line with us here, of course, Roland Schwinn from Pride America. I want to see the picture of the McRib without the sauce. No, that doesn't help me if you guys sent it to me it doesn't. Everything needs to get here on my computer.
I sent it to the computer. I sent it by way of email.
Wrong computer, man. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just enter in McRib. And then I'm going to enter in McRib. And then I'm going to hit images and see if we can find it that way instead. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here on the line with me is Mr. Schwinn from organization Pride America, which at one time was called Blank Pride. We don't want to say that word.
Thank you very much, Phil, because we have worked so very hard to try to eliminate that word from our vocabulary, and your assistants there, the staff members there, saying it, I almost feel as if there's a little bit of maliciousness is going on.
No, sir, there's not at all. I'll tell you, when I said fat pride,
Why did you do that?
I didn't mean to do it. I swear to God, I didn't mean, you know.
We were just talking about it. He didn't mean to do what we said. That's what it used to be. Fat pride was what it called.
Don't say the word. What is going on with that guy?
I don't know.
wife.
I apologize, Roland.
Yeah, sure. I think I've been very polite. If he says it one more time, I'll come down there and I'll tear him apart.
They didn't mean to do it on purpose.
Yeah, you didn't mean to do a lot of things. People don't mean to do a lot of things, my man. But they wind up doing them anyway. And if I hear either one of you guys do it again, I'll come down there and I'll rip you apart. I'll take you apart limb by limb.
Can I ask you what happened to you just then?
The guy said the word.
No, I know he said the word, but what did you... I heard you go through...
It's very similar to... It's very similar to morphing into a werewolf. I'm not saying that that's what happens, but there is a body shift. The body doesn't change, but the internal organs shift. And
you're telling me that you have weaned yourselves off of that word so thoroughly, and you have so that word has become so toxic to you that when you hear that word, you go through a physical change like somebody turning into a werewolf.
It's the physical. I'm just saying that I imagine the physical pain is similar to that which was experienced, or is, or I don't know if it exists, it probably doesn't, experienced by those individuals who turn into werewolves. Because there's a physical, it almost feels like the cells are ripping apart.
God almighty, if I were you, and this is not, any of my business, I would definitely take another look at that word and see if you can't work it back into your vocabulary.
Work it back in. Do you understand the work we've done to get rid of it? Do you understand how what anathema that word is? Do you understand what that has done to us? How it's changed us to get rid of that word, and you want us to work it back in? Do you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like when you hear it, you go through agony.
Yes, we do go through agony. We don't want to hear that word. We don't want that word in our vocabulary.
What do you say vocabulary?
Why are you saying it that way?
Because my lips are so fat, I can't say vocabulary. I can't say it the right way.
You can't say buh.
No.
All right, we're looking at pictures here on our network screen here on Phil TV and HD of the McRib. Now, these are the various images that came back to us in our Google search. I don't know if anybody can see this McRib right here that is standing out, but you see there's kind of a light-colored pork meat. You see how dark the McRib is when you get it, and you probably think, well, heck, that's the way it looks. But in fact, and there it is, fully garnished, right there. Roland, when you look at this sandwich, what about it would you say is the standout?
I'm not looking at it. I can't. I won't look at it.
You are watching Phil TV in HD right now.
I was, until you decided that you would violate me.
I have not decided to violate you, sir.
Well, you do when you put a McRib anywhere near me on the screen. You violate me. And we are teaching members of our organization, we're teaching members of Pride America, that when they go to McDonald's and they order a McRib, they are violating themselves. They are committing a self-rape. And when you put me next to anything having to do with a big rib, see, again, I am so large and I am so not in space confined that my lips are so fat I can't say McRib.
You can't even say McRib. You were saying it a few minutes ago.
A half hour ago, yes. That was before I had the car seat.
So, in other words, you're getting fatter as... Uh-oh.
You screwed up that time.
I know. Good God.
Man, well, I don't know what's going on with that guy. It's scaring me.
What is it, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
He morphed.
Popeye?
Yeah. I don't know whether you think it's funny, Henry.
No, I don't.
Well, I guess you think it's funny, because it's not funny to me. I'll come over there, and I will take you apart. There's no problem with me at all.
I blew it. I know I blew it. I'm sorry. I said the word. I'm sorry.
God, that was a whole trip through. You wouldn't even... That was multidimensional, what happened to me.
I don't understand what this is. You guys are so frightened of that word, and it is such a toxic thing, as I said, that when you hear that word...
Yeah, we go through... It's multidimensional changes.
You go through multidimensional changes. All I heard...
What did it sound like? Because I've never actually had it reported.
You sounded like you were changing into... It was like Dr. Heckle... what do you call a guy?
Dr. Heckle.
Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jide.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you guys are jackballs from way back.
Sorry, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Sounded like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like you're right. It's like a something's, you know, I don't know. Maybe if Dr. Jekyll were still around and he wanted to continue his experiments with evil, good and evil and all that, all he would need is to say that word, you know?
Well, he'd have to be a member of Protestant. I don't know what to think about.
And the fact that your lips are so fat that you can't say vocabulary or McRib.
No, I can't. And, oh, you just said the word fat. I guess I said it too, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Now, what is this... I'm going to take a break, and when I come back...
I might have cured myself.
I don't think so. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Find out whether this guy is putting me on and what we're doing here talking about a McRib. I haven't found one image of McRib that looks like anything that he's describing. He said that the McRib without barbecue sauce is something that you don't even want to go near.
Look at that pig.
There's a pig picture here. Good God. Oh, there it is. Look at that. Anatomy of a McDonald's McRib, 100% boneless, 100% nauseating. Wait till you see this, folks. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth.
Look at that.
He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
I heard you say that word.
I said my lips are full, but I can.
All right. Well, if you get sick hearing that word, we won't say that word. But I heard you say the F word.
Phil, you have on your screen right now on the Phil TV and HD pictures of the McRib, and that's what I'm talking about.
All right. So my audience has seen this. And I think what we're saying here is that the McRib is a nauseating looking thing when it is not garnished. What I'm trying to do is getting this thing in the background, I guess. I don't know. Why do I have FTP? Oh, I've got fade going on. Nonetheless, what we're trying to say here is that the McRib is a disgusting-looking food.
That's exactly what we've been trying to tell people.
When it doesn't have when it doesn't have its garnishings on it.
That is exactly what I've been trying to tell people. And this nonsense about whether the idea of whether
Do you want to eat a McRib?
Yes, of course I want to eat a McRib. You hear how I'm getting winded because of the number of times that your staff said the word F-A-T.
Well, you said it yourself, too.
I know, but I got very winded, and yes, I do want a McRib. And that's what the danger is, Phil.
Even though it looks like that.
Even though it looks like that, even though it looks like something that has been digested by a baby and then thrown back up, it looks like a fully digested hamburger in a baby's stomach only a baby's stomach, and then thrown back up as a kind of, almost like a Pavlov mix.
Oh, God.
God, what are you talking about?
I'm giving it back to you guys as good as you gave it to me. But the vocabulary.
And by the way, he can't say vocabulary because his lips. I won't say his lips are too thick.
No, I don't want people to think it's racist. I'm a white man. But my lips are so thick because of my weight.
Right. All right, so.
The McRib, for anyone who hasn't had a McRib, when it's not covered in the throat, the throat about.
Your lips are so your lips have gotten bigger and bigger as you've been eating during this hour, and now I can't understand anything you're saying.
I still don't understand. You don't?
No, I don't.
I'm doing covered UBB. Damn.
Yeah, we can't understand you, Mr. Schwinn.
Why don't you stop eating for the hour that you've been talking to us?
Are you kidding me?
I don't understand what he's saying. I will tell you this. You've made an excellent point about the McRib. I will avoid it. I know that you won't, even though it looks as vile as it does. You people with Pride America, you can't help yourselves.
That's why we're in Pride America. I can't help myself. That's it, McRib. And that's why we are begging, we are pleading with McDonald's to please not sell this particular food item. And help save the space confinement of so many people upon. Boo-boo.
Your words are now no longer making any sense. It sounded like you just said boo-boo. No, good night. Okay, Roland Schwinn from Pride America. I didn't know it was possible, and I don't think it is. I think it's some kind of mental disease he's got.
What about that guy's lips?
I don't think anybody's lips get that much bigger as you're eating food during an hour.
Yeah, but he said he ate so much food that his lips got in the way.
I'll bet you he was eating so much food that his mouth got in the way. Yeah, but it had nothing to do with the fact that he was adding, and now we can say it because he's not on the phone anymore, fat to his lips. This cat, I will tell you one thing, though, and I said it to him, and I mean it. He did a public service tonight by pointing out to us what that vile-looking sandwich looks like without any of the garnishings on it. It is an unbelievable looking mess. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445 here. Coming up, we're going to have our news and information hour. We also have Robert and Bud hanging on for that one. And some things to remind you of, including the website, as well as the contest to win 30 days free from PhilHendryShow.com. Let's go over to Austin. Hey, Austin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil. I wanted to make a comment about that McRib. I enjoy eating a McRib. I think it's very delicious. I've never seen the McRib that man was talking about. I can tell you that
Well, he's talking about the McRib that you eat.
He's talking about a totally different sandwich, because I've never seen a McRib sandwich that looked like... He said it looked like a baby... threw it up or something.
Well, I don't know if you've been online, but there are images of the McRib.
No, I don't need to go online and look at that. I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to look at that. No way.
Well, okay, so let me ask something. You don't want to look at it because why?
I don't want to look. I have enjoyed the McRib sandwich for as long as they've had that sandwich in 1982 when I was in high school. And I've eaten a McRib sandwich. I've enjoyed a McRib. And I'm not going to do anything that's going to ruin my enjoyment of that sandwich. And if that means I stay away from pictures of it after a baby's eating it or whatever you said.
No, it's not after a baby's eating it. It's that it actually looks like something. According to Mr. Schwinn, the McRib sandwich looks like something a baby's already eaten and then thrown back up.
You know, that just gave me a mental image, God.
Well, is this Mr. Henry?
Yeah.
Mr. Henry, I told him not to call your program because it's going to make him sick.
Who is this?
My name is Mary Kay, and we're calling from Lancaster, California. That is awesome. He's my son. He's my son-in-law.
Okay. What happened to him?
He just went over and sat down. He said that you gave him a very, very vivid picture of the McRib, and he said that's blown it all. It blowed it all up for him. I told him not to get on the phone and talk to you. But he wanted to call. He loves listening to your program.
We've talked to him before in the air.
I know. My daughter's out now. Right now she's shopping. And so just him and me right here. So I said, well, turn on the radio. Make yourself feel better. And he turned it on. He heard the thing about McRib. And you said, that it looked like it come out of a baby. That's what put him off. That put him off his dinner. He's not going to have no dinner now.
Yep. Well, what did? Oh, so he was supposed to be eating dinner.
That's right. He's supposed to eat dinner. You want to have dinner now?
I don't want to touch it. I don't want to, because everything looks like it came out of a baby's rear end.
You think that everything looks like it came out of a baby's rear end?
No, that's not what I said, and that's not what Mr. Schwinn said, and not that it makes any difference. He said it looks like it was something that a baby threw up.
You hear that, Ron?
No, I didn't.
He said that it looks like something a bit, and by the way, your name's Roland, right?
No, my name's Austin.
Ah, that's right. They're Austin. He said it looked like something a baby threw up.
Oh, it didn't come out of a baby's rear end?
No, it did not.
All right, well, I bet. It still makes me want to vomit, but I guess I could go over and try this soup. What kind is it?
Tortilla soup. I made it myself.
Right, thanks, buddy.
But anyway, I'm Mr. Remarkable's mother-in-law. I'm Mary Kay. And
well, pleased to meet you, ma'am, and I'm sorry that he was sickened by the imagery that we were using, that Mr. Schwinn was using, but I think it was apt, and I think that once people do investigate this McRib sandwich, they're going to be unpleasantly surprised.
Well, I know that I've personally fed that to my children. I've never believed in fast food. I've always believed and see them as very wholesome meals, the vegetables, as well as, of course, I had something in the back of my throat all afternoon. Vegetable, and it...
Well, listen, thank you very, very much.
Well, I'm not done yet.
877-876-PHIL. So that's the mother-in-law, huh?
That's what she said. That's why I screened the call and put her right on through. I hope that is a good one.
Yeah, huh? Sure, that's great, bud.
What's wrong with it?
She's just as goofy as that son. Yeah, I hope you'll excuse me. I had something in my throat all afternoon.
She's done it in the back of her throat.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Welcome back, anyway, folks, to reality. Thank you for those calls, bud. And, again, if you do want to, you know, maintain any part of your appetite over the next few days, please do not go and see this stuff that we've been showing you, that damn McRib. I'm telling you. And to think, you know, I don't know what it is. McDonald's does make a kind of a food that, in many ways, one can like. One can love, almost. You know, and then they come out with this McRib, and it makes you want to commit suicide. It makes you lose all your faith in humanity.
Yeah, that's my point too. I go to McDonald's and have a Big Mac or have a quarter pounder with cheese or anything, and I think, man, that's the best place I've ever been. And then I see a McRib, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
Yep, that's pretty much my read on that, man. Time for Burger King, man.
Yeah, they probably got something. Burger King look like I come out of a baby.
Probably. All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. News and information now on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876. Phil.
Phil Henry.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. So I got into this jag here in the news during our news segment. I don't know how I got on this this Caligula thing.
You're talking about The Robe. Yeah, but when you talk about the movie The Robe.
I know, but I don't know why I thought about Caligula and this guy that played him. I don't know what we were talking about, but we were talking about crazy guys. But there was a Roman emperor known as Caligula, and there was a movie done about Caligula by Bob Guccione's film company. Bob Guccione at Penthouse Magazine had a production company for movies called Penthouse Pictures, I think. And he did this movie Caligula with Malcolm McDowell. And so it goes, Caligula, this Roman emperor who went down in history as a real nut. I mean, way out there, and a cat that was sexually addicted, and a guy that had orgies going. And I guess in a lot of ways, the typical image of the debauched Roman emperor that a lot of us have. But there's an actor that played Caligula probably better than anybody. He's the very first guy to ever play Caligula on screen, in fact. He's an American actor, and he was in a movie called The Robe with Richard Burton. And then he did the part of Caligula so well, he played the character again in a Victor Mature movie called Demetrius and the Gladiators. The guy's name is Jay Robinson. If you ever see The Robe with Richard Burton and whoever the other...
probably Elizabeth Taylor or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Why?
Because that's what was in all of his movies.
Well, I don't know that that's the case. But anyway, you got to see this guy, Jay Robinson. This guy as Caligula was about the most evil son of a gun. I saw this movie when I was a little kid, and he stood out. And as I'm reading the biography of this guy now on IMDb, it's one of the great things about the internet is that suddenly you realize what you thought was a solitary memory that you had, maybe the only person in the world that had this experience, you realize that millions of people shared it. And this guy who played Caligula in The Robe, Jay Robinson, is they make note of the fact that he was a scene stealer. Man, he stole the scene from Burton. He stole a scene from Gene Simmons, whoever. The guy was the first movie the guy ever did. He'd done Summer Stock. He then went on and did Broadway. And he did a lot of really high-quality Broadway work doing Shakespeare. And, you know, in other words, he's a very, very experienced stage actor. He's an American actor from New York. When he was hired to play this character, Caligula, man, this dude, I'm telling you.
How would you describe it?
I mean, I can't even describe it.
He was sort of, he talked like this, but
I'm not even doing it justice because it sounds like a cartoon the way I do it. This guy was the embodiment of evil. And it wasn't that he was, you know, evil the way we think of a snidely whiplash, you know, oiling his mustache evil, but just the way he moved his body. This guy did stuff with his body. He was almost like a snake the way he moved. And so this character that he created, Caligula, which is a real guy, became a well-known to audiences. Well, who is Caligula, you know?
But who is he?
He's a Roman emperor, man. I'm trying to tell you, okay?
Yeah, you said he wasn't even that bad.
The word that we're getting now is that the word that we're getting now from historians that have done work on researching this guy, Caligula, And they're citing contemporary historians. They're going back to when Caligula lived, and they're reading and rereading the contemporary accounts of him. And what they're finding, in the opinion of some, is that Caligula was a bad emperor, and Caligula was a bad general, and he wasn't a very good, you know, he didn't campaign well. That's what emperors were supposed to do, go out and kick ass, you know.
Like they're supposed to be in a war or something.
Yeah, they had to go out and kick ass on some third world tribe and beat their ass and take over their land. And that's what emperors did. But Caligula wasn't all that good at it. And he wasn't very good at that kind of thing. And he wasn't a very good administrator. But he wasn't as crazy as everybody says he was. And they're beginning now to sort of rehabilitate Caligula's reputation a little bit. They're saying, well, this idea that he was a mental case is not really true so much as that he was just a very bad emperor. He was very inept. And
you say that a lot of times they did that on purpose. They don't like a guy.
Well, that's what they did. A lot of historians. And this is the cruelest part of history, especially in those days, and really leading all the way up to the present days, maybe through the 19th century. If people didn't like you, they would write a history of your life, a history of your actions and the events of your life that was decidedly negative, and that would be the official story. And we found this out now, researchers and historians, and going back and looking at the lives of famous people, they found out now that a lot of people have been wronged by their contemporaries. They were lied about. They were slandered by historians because they weren't very popular people, you know.
Like, who's another guy that did people said was bad, then he turned out to be good?
George Bush?
George Bush. Man, you can't even write the history of these times for another 50 years. So give it up, George Bush. Well, maybe not for another 50 years. Things are getting so compressed now. Maybe 20. I'll tell you one. A guy that I've always talked about. Captain Bligh from the Mutiny on the Bounty. That guy.
What did he do?
Well, what he did was he was supposedly a cruel, mean guy. But it turns out, no, he wasn't. He was not any crueler or meaner than anybody else. He was a very strict officer, which is not unheard of and certainly is you know, to be desired in a ship's captain. But he wasn't anybody that was overly cruel, and he wasn't anybody that was overly... He was a guy that was trying to keep control of his ship. He had a bunch of guys that had just got off board and went to Tahiti, and they had all these chicks and, you know, all this lazy time. So he was trying to kick their ass back into shape. But here's what happened to Captain Bligh. Fletcher Christian had a brother in England. And that brother, who was a printer and publisher, began to publish these broadsides about Bligh that were not true. Began to, she was trying to make his brother look like the victim, you know.
Who's his brother?
Fletcher Christian, I said.
Oh. No, it's Captain Bligh's brother.
Who?
Fletcher Christian.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't his brother at all. Wasn't related to him.
Who was the brother of Captain Bligh?
I don't know.
But you said...
No, I'm talking about Fletcher Christian's brother.
That's the guy that wrote about Captain Bligh.
Yes, and he said that Bligh was a piece of dirt and a real scum-sucking dog, and his brother didn't deserve all this cruel treatment, blah, 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 blah. None of it was true, but it stuck with the contemporary reading public at that time, and everybody likes a good yarn, as they say, and so this was what people read about poor old...
Captain Bligh, huh? I never heard about Mutiny on the Bounty. I heard about, like, if you ever saw Crimson Tide?
Yeah, that was bitching. They're going to have a mutiny on that.
Yeah, Crimson Tide isn't a true story, okay? So.
Yeah, but that was a mutiny.
Yeah, it was a mutiny. Yeah, you're right. Crimson Tide was a mutiny. It was a sort of a mutiny. It wasn't exactly a mutiny. It was a bad decision made by a junior officer.
No, it wasn't. You're saying Denzel Washington's wrong.
Well, I mean, isn't that what they figured out?
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. At the end of the damn movie, they're standing there in front of Jason Robards, who's playing the head guy, and he says, both of you guys, get out of here.
Yeah, but they're saying that the other guy, Gene Hackman, was a bad guy.
No, they didn't, man. That's the whole thing about that. I think the guy said both of you guys were, I don't know what he said.
No, that was mutiny. That was really cool.
That was not a mutiny, man. I don't know what you'd call that, but yeah. And in any event, Crimson Tide didn't happen. I'm talking about something that did happen, but you guys don't care.
Nah, I like me a good fiction read when I'm on vacation.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, what do I tell you guys about that? Anyway, I don't want...
You're always talking about nonfiction. It's boring.
Nonfiction's boring, huh? Oh, okay. Life's boring. All right. Never heard that one before. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. It's our news and information hour. We're going to get into some of this weird stuff. We already told you about the Herman Cain debacle. I have no idea from one day to the next whether these things are truly as controversial as they want us to believe that they are. I believe that we have a lot of really bored spin doctors. And anytime they can get their hands on something like this, they'll spin away. We'll be right back with more here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876. And to answer the question about KUFO in Portland, I guess we're on weekends there now. I get more messages about that station in Portland. I have no idea. I guess we're on weekends there. You know, I apologize, but I don't know these things. All I know is people tell me that they're doing me a favor when they,
we really saved your show. They're playing it on weekends.
It's, you know, that's great, man. Good job. You know, the fact is, the show's what it is, and, hey, you know, our radio show is such an extreme and different version of talk radio. That, you know, earlier tonight when I was on our pre-show, I was saying, you know, we're not going to take any more phone calls. We're just not going to take any phone calls from real human beings because most talk shows, quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, the state of the art in talk radio today is to not take phone calls at all. You know, our LA affiliate, KFI, none of the hosts there hardly ever take phone calls from listeners. That is what is the new That's the new reality in talk radio. Now, it just so happens for us, being on at the time of day that we're on and doing the kind of show that we do, it's probably better that we not take any phone calls because the warm bodies out there, man. But the actual fact is that the state-of-the-art thinking today is, you know, the old days of, and these are the old days, of taking phone calls from listeners is just a sort of a meaningless exercise. I don't know if that's true or not, and I certainly don't, I don't personally believe in it. And I was just sort of, I was just venting before the show. I mean, of course we want to take phone calls, and we do want to hear from you, but I know that, you know, on weekends when we do the weekend show, you know, I'm talking to my producers over there. They go, well, you know, I said, what was the audience calling about?
What did he say?
He said, we don't really take calls. He says, I could tell you what the hosts were talking about, but we don't really take calls on our station.
They don't take no phone calls. What are they doing?
They're doing shows. I mean, look, if you, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you got content and you know how to do a show, you don't have to take phone calls. If you have content and you got a show, you don't have to take phone calls, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you don't take phone calls, then your voice is going to get, like, you probably have cancer and everything.
Yeah, talk about cancer.
I ain't going to get cancer of what?
Cancer of the voice.
Yeah, cancer of the voice.
Cancer of the voice.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever they call it.
You mean cancer of the throat?
I thought, yeah.
Yeah, the voice. Well, what's in the throat?
Where's the voice?
The voice is in the throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you guys just start off sounding real good, and then you start getting dumber and dumber and dumber until you're both hanging from the edge of a cliff, and I got to walk over and pull you up to safety. That's kind of how our conversations go.
Well, we said cancer of the...
Of the voice. And then Robert asked me, where's the voice? And I said, in the throat. And he goes, yeah, there. What do you mean, where's the voice?
I don't know what you're talking about when you say cancer.
Cancer of the throat is where your voice is. God! Possible study of anthrax vaccines' effectiveness in children stirs debate. Do we really need that? The Obama administration is wrestling with the thorny question of whether scientists should inject healthy children with the anthrax vaccine to see whether the shots would safely protect them against a bioterrorism attack. The other option is to wait until an attack happens and then try to gather data from children whose parents agree to inoculate them in the face of an actual threat. A key working group of federal advisors in September endorsed testing, sparking objections from those who consider that step unethical, unnecessary, and dangerous. Sounds very weird. Very weird. But the National Biodefense Science Board, which advises the federal government, is to meet Friday to vote on its... This idea of a terrorist attack using anthrax has been a part of the popular discourse and discussion for a long time. Now, the guy that the scientist who committed suicide, who is alleged to have mailed the anthrax to the Inquirer and to the, you know, to NBC and to others, this was a scientist. This was a guy that worked with the stuff. This was a guy that worked with the Department of Defense, or I think he was working with the Army on, as they said in those days, and they probably still use the word, on weaponizing. Weaponizing. That's a great word. Weaponizing anthrax. And the best that this guy could figure to do is stick it in an envelope and mail it to Tom Daschle and Tom Brokaw.
And the National Enquirer.
And the National Enquirer. And I don't mean to make light of the tragedy. There were people that were killed by this slob who was a real weird ass. If you ever read it, I forget his name, but this weird ass was bothering some woman. He had a fascination with some woman's sorority. He was a real piece of work. Anyway, this guy had dropped this stuff into envelopes, and it wound up killing a handful of people. And, of course, there were other individuals that tested positive for anthrax exposure, which is not necessarily a fatal diagnosis. That happened in Washington. That happened on Capitol Hill. That happened in the mailrooms and so on and so forth. But those people were treated, and they were fine. There were some people that got sick, and I believe some, maybe a few, recovered, and there were people who died, depending upon the level of exposure to this horrific illness. If anthrax was to be used as a weapon, I don't know what they'd do, you know.
Probably blow it up in a bomb or something.
Yo, how do you do it like a crop duster?
A crop duster? I don't know, man. I don't know. You know. But the dude that mailed the stuff was hiding his tracks, to be honest, because they were really a couple of years before they actually had this guy. That other dude, that Dr. Hatfield, I think his name was, that guy was wrongfully targeted. But this guy they had on their radar a couple of years ahead of time. And in fact, the mailbox that was used to mail the anthrax was a mailbox that was right near or right across the street from a house of this sorority that he had a thing for.
Wasn't it a sorority?
I forget, but this guy had a real thing for this one sorority. And sure enough, the mailbox that tested positive for all of this anthrax was near this sorority house. The guy was a real weird ass. Real boo, man, cuckoo, baby. Real cuckoo. So that was our first experience with anthrax. Now we find that the government wants to protect children, and that is, of course, a very valuable, it's a very, very valuable objective. But how do we do that? How do we test an anthrax vaccine? You have to test it on the biochemistry, on the metabolism of a child, because it's intended primarily to protect children. How do you do that? How do you get even the permission of an adult guardian? Is that ethical to say, sure, go ahead and inject my kid with anthrax? So these federal advisors in September endorsed testing, sparking objections. The National Biodefense Science Board, which advises the federal governments to meet Friday. At the end of the day, do we want to wait for an attack and give it to millions and millions of children and collect data at that time? Or do we want to say, how do we best protect our children? We can take care of grandma and grandpa, uncle and auntie, but right now we have nothing for kids. That's pretty much the idea. What's the likelihood of a... And the other thing is, what's the likelihood of a bioterrorism attack with anthrax?
Well, I mean, that's the whole what everybody's worried about right now.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, there are things that we were worried about. Think about this, man. Think about when 9/11 happened. What were they doing at that NORAD test, at that NORAD base?
What do you mean? Eating breakfast.
They weren't eating breakfast. What were they testing?
I don't know.
They were testing a Cold War scenario. The day of 9/11, these guys were going to do a war game of some kind. That was a Cold War scenario. They were imagining jets coming in from Eurasia, from the Soviet Union or China. So now we're worried about bioterrorism attacks. Maybe that's outdated. Maybe there's something out there that we haven't even thought about yet.
Maybe like polio vaccine or something.
Polio vaccine?
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll be back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, with more of this marvelous discussion on our News and Information Hour.
Phil Henry.
What about, like, measles?
The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, welcome back here to our show, and always a fascinating discussion with you guys, Robert. And
well, talk about like anthrax. You said it was probably the Black Death.
Well, I mean, that's what some people think. All right, I don't want to get into a whole anthrax thing, man.
Yeah, but you said that people was living with pigs and everything.
So,
well, that brings up a lot of things.
Yeah, well, it brings up a lot of things with you, bud. If I say somebody lives with a farm animal. Yeah, see, that's what he does.
Now, what's with you, anyway?
Well, guy's living with a farm animal.
Yeah, you automatically go to sex. Everything is sex with you, you know?
No. If I said that I got to go to the store and get, like, bug spray, there's no sex there.
Yeah, well, I'd be one, you know, I'm one guy that would wonder about that.
You kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's see what else we have here. There's this Rick Perry flat tax thing that everybody is digging. Let me talk to you about this. Rick Perry, who is running for president, Republican presidential candidate, the governor of Texas, proposed a sweeping economic plan on Tuesday that includes a flat tax proposal, private retirement accounts for Social Security, a lower corporate tax rate, and reforms aimed at keeping Medicare solvent. In a pitch to right-wing conservatives, the Texas governor outlined a proposal he calls Cut, Balance, and Grow that he says is bolder and more aggressive than what his Republican rivals or President Barack Obama would do. America's under a crushing burden of debt, and the president simply offers larger deficits in the politics of class division. Others simply offer microwaved plans with warmed-over reforms based on current ingredients. Sounds very floral, and by that I mean that as a compliment. But what he's offering here, and these are the kinds of things that get campaigns, you know, up and running. He's shaking things up, you know.
Yeah, he's talking about stuff nobody knows about. Nobody knows anything about this stuff.
Yeah, they do, man. I mean, you and I don't, but people know what this stuff is. What do you mean nobody knows about this stuff?
Sounds really spooky.
Yeah, it's way out there.
It ain't way out there. What's way out there about it?
It's real different. It's real exotic.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's real abstract. Nobody can get into that.
What are you guys talking about? This is economics. Real abstract. Steve Forbes is an individual who agrees with the Rick Perry plan.
I think what Rick Perry's going to unveil on Tuesday is going to be very exciting. A very low rate, generous exemptions for adults and for children, make it worthwhile to invest in America again, drastically simplifying the tax code, lowering the corporate tax rate. We now have the second highest in the developed world. We'll now have one of the best in the developed world. So it's win-win all around.
And then he said,
so with firm leadership, which Rick Perry will provide, which is why I'm
endorsing
him for president.
Shut up.
I think this will be a winning issue. People want it. They hunger for it. You saw it in reaction to Herman Cain's plan, even with that sales tax part of it. Rick Perry does not have a sales tax, which I think is going to make the plan even more appealing.
So what we're seeing, though, these are plans. These are their versions of answers. These are, well, here's an idea. Here's an idea. This is what we need, folks, ideas. Whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're different, we certainly don't want to try bad ideas, but by God, we need ideas. And I think Perry's right when he says that a lot of the stuff that's being offered is, you know, it's the old way of doing it. If we cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes, then that means grow business, grow business, grow business. Well, not necessarily. And then there's the, you know, Keynesian spend, 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 and that will automatically create the jobs that we need because of the public spending on jobs programs. And then, neither one of those ideas make everybody happy. So here comes Rick Perry. He says that he proposed a sweeping economic plan that includes a flat tax proposal, private retirement accounts for Social Security, a lower corporate tax rate, and reforms aimed at keeping Medicare solvent. In a pitch to right-wing conservatives, the Texas governor outlined a proposal he calls Cut, Balance, and Grow that he says is bolder and more aggressive than what his Republican rivals or President Barack Obama would do. In his speech, Perry outlined a broad plan that would make fundamental changes to the tax code and to the nation's entitlement programs. After weeks of calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, he offered five concrete principles for reforming the program. Perry said he wants to keep benefits intact for current retirees, but allow younger workers to choose to put their income into private accounts instead. Perry then said that the...
It's Frank Gray.
Well, I'm talking right now.
He wants to talk to you.
Yeah, Frank, how you doing?
I'm all right, young man. I'm better than Custer. How are you?
Good.
Bill, you really should just not talk about this because it begins to deaden. It's deadening people. You talk about this.
Yeah, turn now, Miss Gray.
Yeah, you know.
What are you talking about?
You're talking this Barry. It's boring. It's boring me. It's boring Margaret.
Bill, I'm sorry, darling. I didn't want to have to tell you, but this is dull. Oh, God, is it dull. And I think you do this a lot. You come on the air, and you start reading and reading and reading, and you don't even know what you're reading, you know?
I agree, Mr. Gray.
Will you shut up?
Frank, I was talking to you.
Give me the phone back. Don't give me up. I'll backhand you. You know, so I was listening to the broadcast, and I heard Dave. Where's the ice, by the way?
Where it always is, up at.
Well, I'm not going out to the pool.
So then?
You go out. Go. Get me ice.
Frank?
Get me ice.
I don't like being talked that way, Frank. Get me ice.
Hey, Frank, you're talking to me, huh?
Yes, I am. I told him to go get me ice, and he's given me an argument. You believe that? I've been married to him for how many years?
I don't know. 40 plus?
Yeah. All right, so you bore me to tears when you talk about this stuff. Isn't there something else you could talk about?
Well, Kim, I think it's interesting. To me, it's interesting.
Well, if it's interesting to you, then why don't you sound like you know what you're talking about?
I guess I don't. I guess I'm...
You're learning along with everybody else, aren't you? Don't talk about this garbage. This is stuff that you should make people watch. The only thing you should do is make people watch the debate. You should say, I'm not going to talk about Dick Perry. I'm gonna...
You mean Rick Perry?
Well, the name Dick is the same as Rick. You know that.
Here's your ice, Dad.
Hey, what'd you call me? Get over here. Sit there.
Frank, what are you pushing Margaret around for tonight?
He always does this.
Because it's fun. All right, so Dick Perry says he's going to come out with this tax plan, right? You don't know what it means, I don't know what it means, and it's Dullsville to talk about it on a talk show, so get off it, okay? Pour me Dewars. I want three, only three. Hold on for a minute, Bill. I want three ice cubes, only three. I want two fingers of Dewars.
Two fingers after the ice is in?
Well, that's something you're just going to have to guess at.
Oh, Frank, come on. What is...
I said... Two fingers of Dewars, three ice cubes.
Frank, what are you doing?
I'm just testing him. You blew it. You put the ice cubes in? Oh, Frank. Yeah.
Damn you.
Now, do it right.
What the hell are you doing, man?
I'm testing this. All right, so anyway, Phil, the Steve Forbes tax plan... Or rather, is it who's running for president?
Dick Perry.
Dick Perry. His tax plan is at... Who cares? Let people watch the debates, and that's what you should say to people instead of making them... Do that right?
Yeah.
I've got my doers. Yeah.
You get your doers. Thank you so much for the call, Frank.
You bet.
All right, so...
Yeah, you just said,
yeah, it sucks.
All right, so I won't talk about it. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Talk about something you know about.
I know about this stuff. Don't give me this stuff I know about. I know about it. I know about it. I just don't, you know... What the hell good is it going to do? Here's the thing about it. Frank was right about one thing, man. You either got to watch these debates or watch these candidates or something. Man, I got to talk about this. I'm just telling you. I mean, I like guys that have got some answers, but I don't know. 877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Netflix has lost 800,000 subscribers, and that's because they really didn't give them a heads-up on this price increase. They jolted their shareholders with a third-quarter financial report that portrayed a company in crisis. The video subscription service's latest blooper reel, released on Monday, included an even larger customer exodus than the company had foreseen. So all of a sudden, Netflix was this really happening company, and they blew it.
Yeah, they blew it by raising prices, just like you done on your website.
We raised prices on our website, but we did it the right way. We didn't say, our prices are going up. We said, if you're a first-generation Backstage Pass member, then your price stays the same. Because we're raising our prices on October the 1st. That's what we said. So, and by the way, speaking of that, and I'm glad you reminded me, people can get one free month of our website if they do one of two things. You need to be entered in a drawing. And if you're chosen, you can get a free month of our website. But you have to either go over and like our Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, P-H-A-N-S, or go over and hashtag at twitter.com/PhilHendryShow the following thing, hashtag P-H-S. That's P-H-S. And you'll be entered into a drawing for a free month of the Phil Hendry website for the month of November. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I was in a hotel last night. I saw this thing about hotel staff being taught how to read body language, you know.
You was in a hotel in Newport Beach?
Went down to Newport Beach, yeah, to, as I said, I did some voiceover work today. So I went down and spent the night there last night in a hotel. Very nice hotel in Newport Beach called the Island Hotel, which used to be the Four Seasons. It's a nice one. And they're nice people, really nice guys. And I had actually booked myself at some bed and breakfast. I don't know why I did it, but I thought maybe I could save money. And I walked into this place. It was a toilet, and I turned right around and split. You know, there was nobody there. And there's one thing, I got a really sensitive nose, and if I smell anything that's off.
What do you smell like? Like rat dung and stuff?
Yeah.
No, I didn't smell rat dung. I just, you know, it's too much of a food smell going on, man. I'm sitting, it's like this place is over some restaurant. So I just left, man. It was very, very late, too. And the guy says, I remember he called me. He said, well, Mr. Henry, you're going to... I said, no, I don't like your place.
You don't like it?
No, I don't. Goodbye. So then I went over and booked, just walked in, man, because I had to find a place to stay. And I walked into this place there on Fashion Island. Really nice people. Really nice guy, including they had a charger for my iPhone. I don't know, that's not a big deal, but I forgot the charger to my iPhone. The fact that they had one, that's pretty cool. So, all in all, it was a very pleasant stay. Now, there's an article here that says the hotel staffs, are being taught to read the body language of guests. Now, this seems a little worthless, but let's read on. Forget calling the front desk. If you're a guest at an Affinia hotel, A-F-F-I-N-I-A, the staff will try to figure out what you need just by looking at you. How weird is that?
Man, the guy going to sit there staring at you?
Yeah. What if you see a guy staring at you and he's trying to look up your shorts?
What are you talking about?
Shut up, bud, will you? Guys looking up your shorts. Anyway, starting this month, the boutique chain is bumping up personal services in its 5 hotels in New York City and 1 each in Chicago and Washington, D.C. Everyone from housekeeping to management will be tailoring his interaction with guests based on body language. A body language expert trained employees over the summer on what cues to look for. A guest who makes eye contact while walking down the hall, for instance, may want sex. And
really?
No, I'm kidding. May be open to conversation. A guest who makes eye contact while walking down the hall, for instance, maybe open a conversation about eyeballs.
No.
No, it's just conversation. If you make eye contact with somebody, though, don't you think that, wow, that guy's making, maybe he wants to talk about eyes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's real funny.
Well, you know something, man? Maybe I'm just not on top of the game here tonight, Mr. Gleason. So we have here, to move on with the story, a corporate tracker constantly tugging on an ear is probably stressed and may be interested in a yoga kit. Or maybe he's an alien trying to signal a ship that is just outside our atmosphere. Ha, 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 I'm only kidding. No, a corporate tracker constantly tugging on an ear. Who tugs on their ear?
I do.
Show me, how do you tug on your ear?
Like, just doing that?
What do you mean, you tug it on your earlobe?
Well, I think so.
Who the hell does that?
I don't know. It does seem kind of weird.
Constantly tugging on their ear. Anyway, well, actually, maybe I do tug on my ear.
Probably why you got such big earlobes. You tugged them all the way down.
That's what happened, bud. Sure. God. So this guy who's tugging on his ear may be stressed and may be interested in a yoga kit or perhaps a therapeutic pillow from the hotel's pillow menu. So if you're there, and hey, you, Charlie, what? Did you see the guy tugging on his ear? Go get him a pillow now, go! You know, they're going to see, you know, and next thing you know, they'll be driving you nuts. They'll be driving you ape. What if you reach down and scratch your... I shouldn't say this.
Yeah, just think of that. What if you reach into your pants to scratch it?
I don't know. What would they bring you?
Probably bring an iced tea.
Iced tea?
Probably they saw you scratching it. They probably send a guy over with Desinex.
Most likely, yeah. If you want to get right down to it. Employees were taught to mirror a guest's volume and rhythm of speech to put him at ease. They learned that if guests are constantly touching their faces, it's likely a sign they're anxious after a long day of meetings or travel. They'll grab their chin or pull on an ear. There's a lot of this ear pulling going on. Those are cues that maybe I should be doing something to get them to their room quick or make them feel comfortable. Yeah. I don't think you need to take a body language class for this stuff.
Why not?
I think this is normal stuff that any human being would know. I think this is normal stuff that any sensitive human being would figure out. Patty Wood, a body language expert who conducted the Affinia training and is also seen on the Bill O'Reilly Show. I'm kidding. No, it isn't her.
Who's that lady on his show?
I don't know. Patty Wood, a body language expert who conducted the Affinia training, says she has never seen such instruction given to all hotel employees. All of this training is so very single guest is so every single guest is treated as special. Staff questions about a guest day won't disappear, Moser says, but he says small talk isn't always enough to get a reading of a guest's needs. You can't always tell from the first sentence whether someone is in a good mood or a bad mood. They may be saying everything's great, but if they're scratching their chins, they may be hiding a weapon in their beach towel. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were kidding about that.
So you people that work in hotels, you're going to be taught to get that body language down, man. Jay Freitag, who has a very unfortunate last name and is also the senior vice president of Smith Travel Research, which tracks hotels. Actually, Smith Travel Research is a CIA front organization. They have nothing to do with travel research. What they're doing is eavesdropping on Chinese intelligence communications. So, you know, anyway, Smith Travel Research, which tracks hotels. It tracks hotels, says of the effort, anything that ultimately gives better customer service is to be applauded. The question, Freitag says, is could this be achieved with a different vehicle? It will be interesting to see if the additional expense for staff training will ultimately result in higher guest satisfaction scores and revenue, because that's the bottom line. You know.
What's revenue?
Money, my young friend. Money, baby. Because if it doesn't turn into money, it ain't worth a pinch of you-know-what. And that's generally what you want all these things to turn into. So body language in a hotel, huh? So what I do, I scratch my beard. What would you do?
Get your flea spray.
Ain't that funny?
Now you're scratching your beard. Mr. Henry, here's some flea spray.
Very funny. Okay, so if I see you scratching your you-know-what, I'll bring you flea spray, too.
We already did that joke.
Yeah. By the way, Gabrielle Giffords has been moved to a hospital in North Carolina to receive additional therapy as this young lady continues to recover from a gunshot wound to the head. Ms. Giffords is scheduled to be in Asheville until November the 4th to work with a therapist who's been involved with her treatment. Ms. Giffords' office did not release the name of the therapist. She was shot January 8th, as you know, in a supermarket parking lot in Tucson during a public event. 6 people were killed, 13 were wounded. Jared Loughner was charged with the shooting, but he is he's pled not guilty. He's being evaluated at a prison to determine whether he's even competent to stand trial. Apparently, he's a schizophrenic. And Ms. Giffords is going to sit down with Diane Sawyer for an interview to be broadcast on November the 14th. World-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry, Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, and Chris Johnson. And from all of us here at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, we hope you'll visit our website, philhendryshow.com. Be sure to enter for a free month of our backstage pass, either by going over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, or twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. See you tonight!
Phil Hendry.